Hello, everyone, and welcome. This is Adam Smithy of webcomichell.com. You are listening to The Tropecast. This is episode number 10. Now, I know at the end of last Tropecast, I wrote a check that it turns out my ass is not quite going to be able to cash. Today, we promised you that we were going to do Tropecast is Magic, a trope episode full of all of the things from My Little Pony. Unfortunately, we're holding out for a couple of really special pony-based guests who are going to ponify the Tropecast beyond any pony's capacity to believe. And so today, instead, we're going to talk about that, but we're also going to talk about some other things and turn it into a general topic where we are talking about guilty pleasures and peripheral fandom.
It's time for the Tropecast.
Yeah, okay, I'm totally done with Fess's techno music. We're going to just use that as our intro song from now on.
And that's the show, everyone. Thanks for coming.
And that's the Ninja's theme song.
So I shouldn't play the Nyan Cat theme right now.
Okay. Just skip it. We have a special all-star webcast beacon panel joining us today. We have people from every sphere of the webcast beacon's influence, practically.
And Ohio.
Joining me, as usual, as my co-host, is Alex Eberle.
Hello, hello.
Back from a long, long hiatus, where he went to the mountains and found inner peace and then lost it on the way back down the mountain, we are returned, Mark Savory.
Oh, crap.
Joining us, of course, is Tropecast regular contributor, Mike.
Hello there.
And rummaging around somewhere in the background, we still have Roscott, who hasn't left from the newscast.
Hey!
So, when I was thinking of today's topic a couple of days ago, because we realized that we weren't going to be able to do the full pony episode today. The first thing that, of course, came to me about the whole brony thing, and let's go back a couple of steps and explain the fascination with My Little Ponies to any Tropecast listeners who have not yet been infected by this. Alex, since you're kind of the one to blame for my current thing, why don't you lay out the groundwork on this for everybody?
Well, just some background info on the show is it was developed by a woman named Lauren Faust, who worked as a writer and animator on things like Powerpuff Girls and Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends. She's also married to Craig McCracken, another big Cartoon Network animator. And the show started last year, and you know, her goal was to make a girls show that pretty much anyone could enjoy, because those don't really exist so much. And one day 4chan found it. Someone posted on the comics and cartoons board about it, and it just kind of exploded so much that, you know, all these, you know, male nerds are having existential crises about liking a girl's show so much. And the Great Pony Wars of 4chan ended up spawning a whole nother image board called Pony-chan, where all the bronies hang out and stuff like that. And from there, it just kind of spread its little tentacles throughout the whole internet. And here we are.
Yeah, it's actually reaching a critical mass at this point. I listened to the NPR Wait, Don't Tell Me game show a couple of weeks ago. They had
Clinton.
They do a thing in the middle where they have three stories. One of them is true. The other two are false. And the true story was about the brony movement and the fandom of My Little Pony with 20-something, 30-something-year-old men. And then last week, the special guest that they had was Bill Clinton. And they do a thing called Not My Job, where they ask a famous person questions about stuff that they have no reasonable way of knowing the answers to. And all three of his questions were about My Little Pony Friendship is Magic. Not only that, he got all three of them correct, including one that he got, which he got a little suspiciously too fast, which to me said, I'm wondering if he's actually been watching this. Because he got it a bit too fast for somebody who was just guessing. He was like, oh, yes, I know what this is.
Now, let me tell you, this is an embarrassing Alex childhood story. I love My Little Ponies when I was a kid. I inherited them from my sisters. I also had a massive crush on Bill Clinton during his first presidential campaign when I was like 7. I was in like the first grade. So like these intersectings of my two childhood lives is kind of stirring up some confusing feelings in me.
That was a perfect moment for a fest laugh.
I'll just go over.
that's essentially the core of the My Little Ponies thing. It's caught on the internet. There have been a lot of people who've been drawing their own characters. Like, a lot of webcomic artists have drawn their own characters as ponies. I know I've done a couple of mine just because I wanted to see if I could.
I started drawing convention goers as ponies at my table.
Yes.
They love me. The thing about the show is it's very well animated. It's got great voice acting. It's got good characterization. So, you know.
Yeah, and you wind up happy after watching it.
Yes.
Which is something that I can't say for a lot of shows. It fills me with a glee that only like the first season of Venture Brothers filled me with after a while. That's part of the whole the topic for today, which is the guilty pleasures, because you know, for men, especially for, you know, I grew up concurrent to My Little Ponies, but it was if you were watching that sort of show and you didn't have a sister or some other good excuse, it was one where they would, you know, pull you to the side and have a talk with you about gender roles and stuff like that, because the 80s weren't nearly as open to alternate lifestyles as they are nowadays, especially in, like, first graders. So I think that's one of the things that feeds into this with the whole brony thing is there's kind of a... this was something that... You know, like the new Transformers shows. They come out with a new Transformers show every couple of years. I personally hated Transformers Animated. Why? Because they mangled a lot of the character designs. They keep just coming up with these bizarre, ridiculous reinterpretations of the old stuff. So it's something from my childhood, but it also has to fight with the things that are actually from my childhood. Ponies... Not so much, because it was something that I knew happened. I just was never allowed to participate in it without feeling exceptionally stupid.
Oh, and
weird.
Yeah. Yeah, you weren't allowed to participate in it without feeling like the weird kid. And now we're all being weird kids together, which sort of makes it okay. Because 4chan has decreed it.
Hooray!
My little pony, my little pony.
Pony! Going.
But that's not the only thing. I mean, there's the part of the appeal of the show is once they realized what they had with the 4chan fandom, they took advantage of it to the fullest extent of their capabilities. There was a character that was thrown into the first episode as a like background gag that one of the animators had put in, because in every episode it focuses on like four or five main ponies. See, the full cast is six, but it usually cuts the cast down to about half for the focus. But they also have all of these background characters that are just wandering around, and since it's done in Flash, they reuse the same bodies but like in different colors over and over and over again. One of the animators was feeling particularly humorous and drew one of the ponies with like googly eyes, basically, like one eye looking up, one eye looking down. And originally in the layout, that character wasn't even going to be visible. But they changed the layout a little bit, and for just a fraction of a second, that character is there. Well, 4chan grabbed a hold of that character, and they named her Derpy Hooves.
Derpy Hooves. Derpy, derpy,
and started doing like fan art and all sorts of stuff for this character that's on there for a fraction of a second. And started coming up with a backstory for her, and the creators, being not idiots, immediately started putting her in more and more episodes. And she is now officially, as of season two, going to be part of the secondary cast, like with actual roles in some of the episodes.
I
so
think she even has a line in one episode.
Ooh, yeah.
Like, and, you know, in a sort of crowd, you know, babbling.
Derpy, derpy.
Is it something like that? Is it?
I think she says, no. Ooh, mushrooms. It was on a soundboard. It was on a soundboard.
Another phenomenon that's come out of this is Dr. Hooves. I don't know why. Out of all of the fan characters that people have created, all of the things that they have ponified, one of the things that kept coming up over and over again was Doctor Who. And usually the depiction is a brown pony with like a clock or an hourglass or something on his flank, and like spiky hair going after the tenant look, because Matt Brown, the new
Matt
doctor
Smith
has Matt Smith has a similar sort of, it kind of looks the same when you draw them as a pony, but there was like a fourth doctor, Dr. Hooves and stuff. So lo and behold, halfway through the first season, what happens to come sauntering across the screen but a male pony, brown, with an hourglass on his flank, and with spiky David Tennant hair. Now, granted, he wasn't officially Dr. Hooves, but they put it in the show. They put something that people had just created as a goof right there in the show. And that's part of the fascination that a lot of people have with this, because this is not just a show. It's like a thing that's actually happening that's more interactive than a lot of TV shows have ever been, which is kind of creepy.
They're embracing their periphery demographics.
Yes. Cool. That's the other trope we're going for today, which is the periphery demographic, which is where you create something that you are specifically aiming for a target audience. And whether or not you hit that target audience is immaterial, because it develops a huge other following, which you never could have imagined. And sometimes, sometimes that other following winds up being, while not as large, significantly more diehard. They're the ones that will shell out huge amounts of cash for weird merchandise and memorabilia, and we'll go through hoops to get all sorts of different stuff, because for whatever, it's like the further removed they are from the target audience, the more intense their love becomes. And I know that the Japanese stuff gets that a lot. That there's whole pages on the weirds, because the Japanese come up with some weird stuff to start with. And the thing that you've got with pretty men talking to one another and it being all about, you know, emotions and feelings and unresolved sexual tension that's targeted at the teenage girls, for some reason seems to also rebound and hit like the 50-year-old men. No, really, it does. They've done studies about it.
Glad I'm not 50 yet.
So that's one of the things that we can also talk about with the periphery. So I think we should start this up, really. And I know we're already like 20 minutes into this, but I think everybody here should admit some sort of guilty pleasure that they have. That's not something that they really would want to become public knowledge and are only going to do now because I'm putting them on the spot.
Okay. Well, I'll start. My name's Ross. I'm an alcoholic. And I've watched more than, I think, 4 or 5 episodes of My Little Pony at this point. But, you know, since we're already talking about that, I don't know if that's necessarily news to anyone. Show that I'm embarrassed for watching. There's got to be a few. Probably. God. I'll watch pretty much anything that they put on Hulu these days. I've seen, God, I watched 30-something. I'm sorry. I felt bad. I'll watch pretty much any Saturday morning cartoon simply because it's a Saturday morning cartoon. True story.
Do they do those anymore?
Sometimes.
Sometimes. Okay.
Yeah. That's the best I got.
I think 30-something's probably the strong one there.
No, fair enough.
All right. Somebody else.
Oh, Yo Gabba Gabba. I totally watch Yo Gabba Gabba.
Yeah, that's not really that is a good example of a peripheral audience there, because I know the guys that created that
made the
listening.
Aquabats. They're one of the guys is from the Aquabats. How awesome is that?
Well, they were talking, I heard him on a NPR show, and he was talking about how they wanted to get, like, the Roots on, and he wasn't sure how to contact the Roots or something and how to present themselves, and he got as far as, I make the show Yo Gabba Gabba, where they go, oh my god, we love that show, and he was like, you do? Because apparently the Roots were already watching it.
That's what I love about the Roots. Like, they do. I mean, they're on Jimmy Fallon all the time now. I mean, like, they're the house band. How cool is that? That they have, that the Roots is like, yeah, we'll be a house band for Jimmy Fallon, sure. They did this amazing sketch called Ladysmith Snack Mambazo, where they all sang about their, like, favorite foods. It's amazing. Okay, I'm done.
Okay. Somebody else have a turn.
Well, a guilty pleasure. Some time ago, not for a long time, I used to watch Pokemon. Because I thought Pokemon was totally dumb, and then a coworker was telling me, oh, well, it's pretty neat because they have all these magic powers and stuff. And one day it was on, and I'm like, oh, this is so retarded. I'm going to sit down and watch this stupid show because, you know, then I can make fun of it. And I actually found myself watching Pokemon. I learned way more about Pokemon than...
It's okay, Mark.
I know.
We understand.
I still say Meowth is, like, the best Pokemon ever, but There are those.
You kind of sound like him. Yeah. Meow.
I never made that connection until now, but
I never thought of that. I
like my world's
really.
A little bigger now.
He sounds like me. I don't sound like him.
Okay, I'll give you that.
But I still he was the best part of Team Rocket.
Oh yeah,
definitely.
Well, they didn't have a very high bar to begin with. I mean,
I don't know. James is kind of awesome.
But Team Rocket's James. The whole reason to watch the show. I mean, that's yes. that's I could care less about Ash. I mean, really, I don't care. Yay, okay, he's got badges and stuff. No, I want to see Team Rocket fail horribly. Team Rocket is one of the last great villain teams. You know, the 80s were punctuated by so many awesome villain teens in cartoons. I mean, yes. Decepticons, Starscream, and Soundwave, and Starscream, and Megatron, yes. and Starscream. And Cobra Commander, which was basically Starscream in a silly mask.
You're talking about the trope that is a double act, a so-called double act.
Yes.
Which.
But to me, they were the whole reason to watch the show. I don't care about the good guys. Maybe that says something important about my personality. But. The bad guys are really the interesting ones in a lot of those shows, and when you make the bad guys either too hostile for the audience to even sort of get behind them, or too ineffective, or simply not there at all,
yes.
it takes something away from the show for me. All right, Mike, you haven't fessed up yet.
Well, that's why I'm trying to think of something to fess up to. I'm just going through my list of my giant collection of movies and things at the moment, and what else I have around here that's... I don't know if there's that much I'm that ashamed of. There probably should be, but... I do own copies of the original three Sailor Moon movies that are sitting right over there. As long as it's not an Americanized version, it's actually not that bad.
that's not too bad of a That's another one that we had a lot of male crossover on that. Yes. It was definitely designed as a show for girls, predominantly in Japan. But at the same time, they included a lot of elements that were common in male shows.
Yes. It wasn't until it was brought to America and they put in pretty pink boxes that it went weird. It was actually a fairly decent show to begin with. Then they tried to make it for girls in America. So they took out most of the violence and anything that's more over the top, and they gave it really stupid voices and...
Yeah. Yes. I don't know. I think it officially lost my interest as a guy watching it once it started being about Scrappy-Doo. I mean, Chibi-Moon.
Scrappy-Doo?
Yes. Yes, well, Chibi was a whole other issue that you got to go into.
Yeah, she was kind of a show ruiner for a lot of people, even if they were the target demographic.
Yes.
So it...
But again, it's the comparison of the original Japanese version versus what they did in the American version, because they did all sorts of weird and wacky things.
No, she was still annoying in the Japanese version, though.
Well, yes, she was. There's no way around that, but...
She was annoying in any language.
Indeed.
Trying to go, what else did I have going through here? I don't even know.
It's like Seven Zark 7 in Battle of the Planets. It's just sad. It just added in dumbness for kids.
See, I'm going to have to think about things for a while, because I'm going through my lists, and it's like, okay, what do I still have around that's
Well, it doesn't have to
wacky.
Be a TV show.
I happen to know one that you have. I happen to know you have a guilty pleasure.
Oh,
oh
you're going to
think
out
so?
Him something.
I'm going to out you. I'm going to out you on your guilty pleasure, Mike.
Okay, then, fine.
You own a copy of Catwoman.
Yeah, well.
And there's no denying it.
Oh.
Yeah, and it's been sitting there for 8 years and it hasn't been watched. So
don't give me that. You said it wasn't that bad. You told me it wasn't that bad if you just watched it.
It's not as bad as people think. It's got a weird.
So you have seen Catwoman.
Of course I've seen it.
And you own it.
Yes, I do.
Seeing we could forgive, but owning.
That's pretty telling, Mike.
Meh. Whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. The chat room goes, and you paid full price. Thank you, Ninja.
That I did not do. I bought it during a Blockbuster video buy five movies for $20 thing. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Okay, how about this? And you paid.
That's the sort of movie they ought to pay you to take away from them. So you didn't even think to get any money out of them. You should have done it. Gee whiz.
Well.
All right. Alex, you want to?
I do have a guilty pleasure. That it's not the one I mentioned on Twitter earlier, but my musical tastes are pretty eclectic. I listen to a lot of like alternative rock. We have this great independent radio station here in Columbus. It's awesome. And, you know, even though I usually listen to pretty eclectic alternative independent stuff, I admit I have a problem with Top 40 radio.
What, you mean like Britney Spears and all these idiots?
I kind of like Miley Cyrus.
Oh no.
Sorry.
This program is a part of the Webcast Beacon Network and is hosted on the Rampage Network. Follow us on Twitter at Tropecast. Email us at tropecast@gmail.com. Or leave us a voicemail by calling 1-320-310-0922. The Webcast Beacon Network, covering and promoting creativity and the creative process since 2007. Webcomics, comic news, tropes, and web fiction at webcastbeacon.com. Now, back to our show.
Okay.
Wow.
All right.
Jesus.
I draw the line at Justin Bieber, though.
Oh, is that part of my pancreas I threw up? Oh, God.
Oh, jeez.
All right. I suppose it's probably my turn then. we all know that I've already owned up to a bunch of extremely bizarre fandoms, like the Ninja Turtles new series and old British sci-fi stuff that's horrible and bad movies and stuff. I have a problem with professional wrestling.
Ooh.
Yes, I know that it's fake. No, I can't help it.
What kind of professional? Are you talking like the really showy, flashy stuff with all the big names, or are you talking like the other group that nobody...
I'm talking about all of it. I watch probably 10 hours of professional wrestling a week. I watch Raw and SmackDown and Superstars and TNA. Granted... I do it while I'm doing other things. It's not just that I'm just sitting there watching wrestling most of the time. And I've also been to several of the wrestling things in the last year. Pretty much any time they come to the Cincinnati area, I go watch them.
But it's the athleticism that you're really, really there for, right?
No, it's the cheesy soap opera that I'm really there for.
That's what it is.
The soap opera for men.
It is.
It's like a telenova, but where people punch each other all the time.
Yes. It says, I used to watch wrestling. And yeah, it is. It's a male soap opera. It's the drama and the the trails and the, you never know what's going to happen because you know they're making up as they go along part of the way.
Yeah, I used to be really big into it. Here's a challenge to anybody. If you can happen to get your hands on the 1999 sold-out pay-per-view from WCW, if you watch the front row at the corner that everybody has to watch by, I'm the big guy in the tie-dye that's as tall as all the wrestlers.
Mm.
I was front row seats for a pay-per-view. Yes. So, nice. So I got out of it for a long time, and then last year, my mother called me up out of the blue and said, your brother wants to get WrestleMania. He wants to watch WrestleMania. We were thinking if you came down and split, you know, because it's like $60 to rent the pay-per-view. So they said if you came down, you could, you know, then it's like 10 for you and 10 for me and 10 for him and 10 for the friends that he's bringing over. So it was, I was like, okay, that's not a horrible of thing. And of course, then I have to do research because I have to understand why they're hitting one another. So I watched the last couple of weeks of the wrestling that led up to it, and that was apparently a gateway drug because I've been watching it more or less nonstop ever since.
Yes, well, you have to know what happens. Everything keeps leading into the next fight. They never resolve. They just kind of morph into the next thing.
Oh, yeah.
That's a soap opera.
That's what happened when I started watching stuff on That Guy with the Glasses.
Yeah. Well, now I just want to throw this in before I forget, because I wanted to mention this since we're talking about tropey things, which is appropriate on the Tropecast. Transformers, the cartoon, which I've not actually watched a lot of.
I have to pause you for just a second. Alex, okay. I have an idea. We're going to get rid of Becky as the Tropecast mascot. We need a tropey hooves.
Tropey hooves.
Yes, tropey. Already.
A tropey hoof.
I am tasking you with this. With the little beacon symbol.
With a little beacon on the flank, yeah.
Oh, yes.
Guys, this already exists.
We weren't calling her tropey hooves before.
Tropey hooves. That's what we
Okay, sorry, go ahead. Transformers. Sorry.
Transformers. This comes to mind because this god-awful Michael Bay movie is out here now, right? Yet again, To Torment Us, another Michael Bay movie, which is a trope in and of itself. People who like to punish themselves. Talk about a guilty pleasure. Anything by Michael Bay. I don't suffer from this delusion, but some people do. Well, anyway, 3D is also one of these big tropey things, right?
Yes.
And we all know that some of these are really bad, like Clash of the Titans. But people go see this stuff anyway. Well, I found out that ThinkGeek, ThinkGeek.com, the geek store, has come up with a new product, which I think is fabulous. It is a pair of 2D glasses. So what they are, they look just like the 3D glasses, but instead of making things 3D, it takes the 3D picture and makes it 2D.
Well, it's actually really easy to do.
You're really just seeing one side of the 3D image.
Well,
but isn't that
because,
neat? If you go to one of these ones that's really bad, like Clash of the Titans, you could just put on these glasses, and then you could just watch the movie.
Yeah,
but then you'd be paying for the 3D experience.
This is
why
true.
Wouldn't you just go to the 2D version?
Well, let's say your friends think 3D is so awesome. And
then
you
need
new
friends because they're morons.
Then you could go and wear these glasses and not have to admit that you're not watching the 3D.
No.
See, that's the funny thing for me, because I'm sort of a cyclops. I have an eye that is essentially not on. I mean, it's there. I don't have, like, the empty socket, but it's just blur.
Oh.
So I have an eye patch that I wear sometimes if it's giving me a headache. And I love going up to the 3D movie and say, can I have a discount? I can't see 3D.
And they tell you?
I've had various different... usually they just try and get me to go to the 2D version if they're playing a 2D version.
Mm-hmm.
which I suppose I can understand, but I know that that has been a huge problem with the 3D movies recently. There's been so much negative kickback from the 3D that a lot of studios are having trouble keeping the feature in 3D in theaters because theaters don't want to play it in 3D.
No.
Well, that's because most of them are crap. They're all like these dumb kids movies or gross out comedies or something.
Well, yeah, it's like once in a while there is a movie that actually is decent in 3D, but so many of them are not necessary. They have like one little part of it that's in 3D and that's it. And that's not, it's like I went to see Tron and I was expecting, okay, Tron 3D, it's going to be this big spectacular light show thing going on. No, they had like barely nothing in it that was worth 3D at all.
Yeah, that would be a picture that, yeah, okay, 3D, I'm with you. If they were making Lord of the Rings right now and did it in 3D, I could say absolutely. You know, that's worth going to see in 3D. But, you know, Spy Pets 5 or some crap? No. But that's a tangent anyway.
Yeah. Got to see Despicable Me in 3D. There was no point to that either. I mean,
Coraline, great in 3D, great in 2D.
Sure,
it was 3D looked really good. I don't remember if Fantastic Mr. Fox was 3D.
Nope,
it might have been. I don't remember. It would have been fine in 3D. I mean, you know, some things great in 3D. Wouldn't mind paying the money for if it's quality, but not. Not, you know, like some of these talking pet body function humor crap kid shows. They're not.
No. I'm just waiting for George Lucas to release the original Star Wars trilogy in 3D. Now instead of Han shooting first, he shoots the audience. And
there's the link to Toby Who's guys.
Oh, thank God that exists.
I think probably Star Wars and the prequels will be fine because they're all digital. They can easily make most of that 3D without a lot of trouble. But the originals won't look nearly as good. Ooh.
They're going to reshoot entire scenes just so they can have it in 3D.
Yeah, I'm not a fan.
Yeah.
Because that's what we need. Jar Jar from Extra Dimensions.
Yes. We don't have the Hitchcock stuff that he did in 3D, we can't get that on video. We can't get our hands on that and see it in 3D. But we can see, you know, crap in 3D.
Yes, crap in 3D.
The movie.
In 3D!
It's definitely not Scottish.
No.
I'd love to see Hitchcock in 3D. Dial M is one. He did a couple of them. Rope, I think, was done in 3D, too. Not sure.
There's actually a chain of theaters in China that is doing movies in, I think they're calling it like 6D. And basically, in addition to it being in 3D, they've got like fake smells that they're pumping in at various different times during the movie.
Wow.
And they've got the seats that move like so that they rumble when the car is driving down the rough road. And then I think they've got like sprinklers or something so that if you go into a scene where it's raining, it'll actually start dribbling on the audience.
And then
you'll be immersed and you will like it.
And if there's an action sequence, randomly people are shot.
But it's China.
Is that in red China? Yeah, okay. I don't know. Well, that's all been kind of done, hasn't it? I read something, some new movie is coming out, some kid spy movies or something. They're gonna have like scent in the audience, you know. It's gonna be the smell-o-vision a little bit.
Yeah, I remember smell-o-vision from SCTV.
That's based on the William Castle stuff. I mean, it's like,
yeah,
you know, the nothing new. But
and polyester was in smell-o-vision.
Uh-huh.
John Waters.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the Samurai Pizza Cat. Never mind.
There was one named Wow. There's this, actually that was totally like I was not in the key demographic for Samurai Pizza Cats, but I totally watched it anyway in high school.
Hey, I had a pet ferret named Guido Anchovy.
Actually, same with Pokemon. Me and my friends were like seniors in high school joking about Psyduck.
Psyduck.
Psy?
That is indeed the sound that they make.
Long after the game was, I think it was actually after the show was out, I actually learned how to play Yu-Gi-Oh! So that I could absorb elements of it that I liked into the card game that I'm working on. So it's, I never successfully played against anybody other than a computer, but I learned how to play Yu-Gi-Oh! Like through all of the old Game Boy Advance simulators and stuff.
Learned how to play? What? Haven't you watched the cartoon? No one actually knows how to play Yu-Gi-Oh!
Me and my friends actually in college played Yu-Gi-Oh!
They don't play the game in the cartoon.
We had two rules for playing Yu-Gi-Oh! Rule number one was that we had a limit on how many like packs you could buy because we didn't want to get too crazy with like buying every single like expansion pack. So we had a salary cap. And the other is you had to play it in the dramatic style that they play it on the show. Like, so we would only play it, you were only allowed to play it if you would go, "Now I take this card and turn it, thus revealing..."
Yes. Yeah. "I summon the Celtic Guardian in attack mode.
And put this card face down.
Screw the rules, I have money.
Dun dun dun."
So that was fun.
Yes.
Yes. Let's see. So how about writing stuff in for a peripheral audience? Like, you're aware, like they've done with My Little Pony, when you're creating this, that there is a potential that you're also going to pick up a bunch of other, you know, okay, here's, this is kind of a funny, horrible thing. My brother did a zombie movie when he was in film school. And yes, the guy that was doing a lot of the setup for the shots and stuff wrote a bunch of scenes in that involved like the main character's girlfriend being excessively tied up and shots of her being tied up and led around while being tied up, because it was sort of one of the subplots. But it really wasn't a subplot until he wrote all of these extra scenes. So they filmed it, and then they found out that the guy who added all of the bondage scenes kind of had a thing for bondage. So he'd snuck all of this extra stuff in because he had the opportunity to willingly cause a girl to get tied up and be led around and do... Well, it wasn't obvious when he was doing it. I mean, it wasn't like, "I know, we should tie her up." But it was... At the end, when you watched it, it was like two-thirds zombie movie, one-third bondage flick. Especially once he was done.
I gotta say, that sounds awesome. No, that sounds amazing. I want to watch that movie now. For reasons I won't get into.
And you see things like that where I'm not sure this is so much playing to the peripheral audience. This is much more in the, there's an author trope. I gotta look it up now what it's called. But it's
author appeal.
Yeah, author appeal. But if you have peripheral fans who also fall into the author's particular wheelhouse of kink, then I imagine you probably would, in fact, pick up a fair amount of author of people who are glomming onto this that are outside of the core demographic.
Yes.
And some of the stuff, when you watch it, when you take some of the stuff out of context, especially in kids' cartoons, there's some freaky stuff going on.
Yeah. Now, are we talking about the difference between going through and either creating something based on what you think the fans would like include, like an homage to the fans, or are we talking more about putting something in to try to hit a specific demographic?
Well, I think...
I mean, putting something in for the fans that are there, or putting something in to try to get the fans? Because I think there's a slight difference.
Well, I think you'd, you could probably do it either way. I'm sure there are some things where, like with My Little Pony, they did not know that they were going to get a giant following of 30-something-year-old slackers. No. They didn't know that was going to happen. But once it started happening, they were going to take advantage of it. Like there's a music video that they used for the hub advertising the show, which uses the California Girls song by Katy Perry but reworded, and it actually mentions like the term brony, which was a fan term they came up with on 4chan. In the song advertising the show. So they know that fans are out there watching.
So it'd be a little bit like Wedge in the Star Wars movies.
I think it's more like Boba Fett in the Star Wars movies.
Yeah. Well, both. It's like they suddenly became super popular, so we have to add them more. Of course, Boba Fett, he wound up in, what, all 6 of the pictures, didn't he? Or something like that?
More maybe after anyway. The special edition was done.
Well, you had Jenga in the first one. Boba wasn't around yet. But close enough, I suppose. But yeah, Wedge is a lot more obscure of a kind of fan person. That's more of the books, I think, than the movies.
Yeah, okay, but they found he was popular, so they drew him in.
I have found a trope that matches some of this, which is playing to the fetishes.
Yes.
But I have linked it. And basically, yeah, it's it says, pick a fetish, any fetish, and now it includes subtle nods to it in your series. It could be a running gag that keeps getting mentioned, like a specific character who keeps ending up in fetishistic situations. A costume which is very clearly meant to evoke feelings of fetish wear. Yeah, so there is definitely a trope for this. That's definitely more of an intentional. I think that may be a case of trying to sneak one past the censors, too. If you're creating a character that you know people are going to assume the worst possible things about.
Yes. Yeah, it's the differences between giving that. Whoa, that was kind of weird.
Yeah, sorry.
It's like the differences between getting that subtle nod to something the fans will get, opposed to general audience, to the trend that went through, at least through the 90s, it seemed, to always include in a television show, there must be one gay person somewhere. Just to have that, you know, other demographic appeal in there someplace. Try to hit that edge.
Yes. Well, that's also part of the rainbow coalition of let's make sure that we cover every possible demographic by, you know, gay friend, black friend, girlfriend to the main character, and then
The Power Ranger standard, yes.
You see this. You see this in World War II movies. You got to have some guy from the Midwest. You got to have a black guy. You got to have some guy from the Bronx. There's tons and tons of movies, submarine movies especially, where you have like the whole gamut of American culture is in there.
And one of them is gay, but we don't ask.
He may be, but they didn't put that in on purpose. Maybe that was just casting. I don't know. You always had like the young kid as well. You know?
Yeah, a lot of times that's just lazy writing and, you know, instant plot just add water. It's like 3 people with widely different backgrounds walk into a bar. Now that bar is on a submarine and they're trapped together under stress. And go!
Yes. And
that's a formula.
They're vastly different people that would never be together in any situation except for this. And now they must get Get a log. Yes, we love it.
Well, but that's different than the pandering to every possible racial stereotype that you can come up with. That's I'm going to put disparate elements together because I want them to fight. That's not, we're trying to be PC and include every ethnic group that we possibly can, even if it means we wind up with one crippled lesbian Asian ginger character. Because
now we're covering Ghostbusters Next Generation.
Hey, you said it, not me.
Yes. Well, honestly, who makes a Ghostbuster out of a guy in a wheelchair? Whatever. You would think mobility would be an issue.
Yeah, but sometimes you have to walk upstairs. We saw that in the first movie. Like, that was not a wheelchair accessible place where not Vigo, the first guy.
Gozer,
thank you. Not.
We've got to go up 60 flights of stairs in a building with no power.
Yeah, the stairs go up. Yeah.
I'll just wait down here on the street for you guys.
That's why they have the, jetpacks on the wheelchair. So it's a hover track.
Oh, yes, the jetpacks on the wheelchair.
That seems to be the most logical solution to me.
Yes, we strap on the proton packs and we make them into a rocket.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to have a portable nuclear accelerator on your back, why not have it be able to fly?
Yes. It's perfectly logical.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I see nothing wrong with that.
No. It could be a little hovercraft kind of thing going on.
Sure. Oh. Well, we are running low on time, so anybody have any other last-minute shameful confessions of fandoms that they enjoy that they want to throw out there?
You know, I know I watch some things I'm not proud of, but I can't think of a damn one of them. Then again, I guess most of my Tumblr feed I'm pretty ashamed of.
I tend to enjoy trashy reality TV every now and then. I like watching other people bad choices. It makes me feel bad.
Yeah, that's...
I have watched some Jerry Springer in my time. Not for years.
Oh,
proud to say I've recovered.
Oh, I actually went to a live taping of Jerry Springer once. That's kind of funny.
Nice.
Yeah, I was telling Alex on Twitter, if you like trashy reality TV, you need to watch Bait Car. I love Bait Car.
It looks Bait pretty cars. Awesome.
Yeah, they have these cars which they can remotely disable and lock simultaneously. And then they put them in places which are high profile for auto theft. And they wait for some dumbass to come by and steal it. And then they lock him in.
Nice.
All the while they've got cameras on him from like every different direction. The beautiful part is there's two moments that are just epic in Bait Car. There's the moment immediately after they lock the door where the guy stealing the car realizes he has done something incredibly stupid and is about to be caught. And he's like, "Aw, beep, man.
Yeah.
We're busted." And then after the police have them out of the car, the other half is the explanation where they're like, "No, I saw the car on the street and the people left it there and I was just parking it for them." And, of course, the thing is, there's a camera inside the car, so just a minute before, you were, like, watching them going, like, "Woo, we're going to take this to the chop shop, and they're going to give us money, and it's going to be awesome." And then they're like, "I was just parking it for them, officer."
Yeah, I watched the video on Bait Car's website. It's just, like, 4 or 5 minutes of the show, and there's this guy who calls his friend on his cell phone from the stolen car. And says, "Dude, these guys just left this car running on the side of the road, and I took it, and I'm in the car right now." And then the police deactivate it, and it starts slowing down when he's not still on the phone. He's like, "Oh shit, what's going on? Ah, the engine cut out." It's pretty awesome.
I think with that, we are going to go ahead and wrap this bad boy up. Next time on the Tropecast, we do not have a date yet, but I promise you, next time we do this, we are going to have a My Little Pony-tastic explosion of awesomeness with
Pony!
With several prominent webcomic My Little Pony related people, and there's going to be drawings of all of everybody that we can. There's going to be drawings of everybody as ponies, and there's going to be.
Boy.
Yeah, it's just going to be. We're going to rub as much pony on this one as we can. We're going to.
I would
that
be
didn't
a
sound right.
Team. Nice.
A crack team of ponyologists.
We're gonna
my little
this
pony,
thing.
My little pony, you crapped so it's not, on and now I've disowned you.
Pony, yeah, we're not backing out of it.
My little pony.
Until you all shared its magic with me. Big adventure, tons of fun. A beautiful heart, faithful and strong. Sharing kindness, sneezy feet, and magic makes it all complete. Yeah, my little pony. Did you know you're all my very best friends?
My little pony. I'm sorry.
Okay, so with that, we're going to go ahead and end this session of the Tropecast. This has been Guilty Pleasures, episode number 10 of the Tropecast. I am, as always, Adam Smithy of webcomichell.com, joined once again by...
I am Alex Hebert of alexesguide.net.
That'd be Mike Delheim of onyxsparrow.com.
And this is Mark Savory of AutumnLake.com.
And I was Ross, but am no longer after hearing this much about My Little Pony. Systemcomic.com.
Push the button, Frank.
Which button stops this thing?
It's the sound of Fess when he's only got 6 or 7 projects running concurrently.
As opposed to 30.
No, he's been corrupted and jaded against the world.
Okay, who wants to do their Fess impressions? I'm going to make this a thing. That was pretty good, Fess laugh.
But I don't like that!
That's not what I meant!
Oh, yo.
No, wait, listen.
Ross Scott, what'd you have for breakfast? No, I can't even.
I'm okay. Fess of TuneIn.com.
This is
I just
Fess.
Love the fact that the episodes without Fess have just become people doing riffs on Fess.